Who says magic only happens in books? Didn't you ever play around with a Ouija board when you were a kid? Hold a mock seance at a sleepover? Stephen Browdy did, and never forgot it.
It was a slow day in Northampton, Massachusetts, and my friends and I had seen the only movie in town, and they said, well, let's play this game called Table Up. And what they meant was, let's have a seance. Now, I knew nothing about parapsychological research, and neither did my friends, but they said they had played this game a few times before, and when it worked, it was a lot of fun. So for the next 3 hours in my house, I watched my table rise under our fingers. And, I mean, I realize there's very little, if anything, I can say about this that will quell all sorts of reasonable skeptical concerns. But I can tell you that this was my table, it was my house, it was broad daylight. My friends were not practical jokers. I'm not even sure they had a sense of humor. And I probably should mention we weren't stoned. Well, it blew me away. Actually, it scared the hell out of me.
Stephen Browdy managed to put that experience out of his head long enough to finish his PhD and earn tenure as a philosophy professor at the University of Maryland. But he never forgot it. And eventually, he decided he had to try to figure out what had happened. He began investigating parapsychology. Browdy's debunked a number of well-known psychics, but he's found at least one he thinks is the real thing. He told Steve Paulson about the woman he calls the Gold Leaf Lady, a Florida housewife named Katie.
Katie seems to be an all-round psychic. She apparently is a healer. She works with the police regularly or other authorities to solve crimes. But the reason I was there was because many people have reported seeing this gold-like, very thin foil appear spontaneously and instantaneously on Katie's body. People have said they would hold her hand and suddenly strips of the foil would appear on her hand and arms. And so I had to go see that for myself. And in fact, it's pretty much what I saw.
What is it made of?
It's made of brass. So it's about 80% copper, 20% zinc. And most people usually ask at that point, well, couldn't Katie just be exuding this somehow from her skin? And it looks often as though that's what's happening, because sometimes her skin may glisten a little bit before the stuff appears. And then when it appears, it literally appears instantaneously. The problem with that is that Katie would have to have lethal amounts of copper and zinc in her system to be exuding it or sweating it from her body. And besides, blood work and other medical tests don't show any unusual metallic substances in her system.
So you've been with her when this gold leaf appears on her body?
I have, yes.
You're with her, you're watching her, there's nothing there, and then suddenly there is?
That's exactly the way it happens. And I know how it sounds. You've got to be there to see it. But the fact is there's quite a bit of firsthand testimony, not just mine. And I've been there with magicians also. I mean, it's reasonable to ask whether this is something that Katie could be hiding somewhere on her body and then surreptitiously placing it in convenient spots. But the way we usually investigate her is that we bring her into a room. This is in Florida, so Katie is usually wearing a short sleeve shirt, so nothing up her sleeve. We look very carefully at her arms. We examine her hands. It's very easy to see when you're doing that whether she's concealing something that way. We look in her hair. A physician who's present does a slightly more intimate examination. And then we sit her down in the middle of a room, train some video cameras on her, and then suddenly there'll be something there. Or sometimes what we've seen are raised welts on the skin, like stigmata, sometimes in the shape of a cross or in the shape of a butterfly. Now, by the way, that's not especially remarkable. The history of hypnosis has lots of documented cases of people doing things like that. And good hypnotic subjects can raise welts on the skin.
So she apparently can create this foil-like substance at will. I mean, just at her command?
No, not at will. It seems to be an affliction. Sometimes it goes on for months at a time, and then there'll be dry periods where nothing happens. She would like it to go away. It's embarrassing. If she goes to buy something at the 7-Eleven, for example, and then her face suddenly breaks out on the foil, that's a difficult thing to explain to the cashier.
On the other hand, you would think that she's getting some mileage out of this. I mean, I don't know if she makes money from sort of doing this kind of demonstration. Certainly, she's gotten the attention of people like you who come and study her.
Well, that is a kind of secondary gain, but Katie has made no effort to capitalize on her apparent psychic ability. She's not interested in being a public figure. She doesn't earn any money except for modest honoraria that she gets for a time off from work.
So do you have a theory as to what explains these paranormal activities?
No, the most I can do is to speculate about the psychogenesis of the phenomena, as I did in Katie's case. What's interesting is that she was experiencing these various poltergeist-like phenomena. Objects were moving around and appearing and disappearing. And then one day, a carving set appeared out of nowhere in her house. And her husband said, well, what good is it if it isn't money? And then 2 days later, Katie's body started to break out in what looks like gold leaf. So if you want my more or less pop psychological analysis of this, it would be that symbolically this allows Katie to satisfy her husband's demand for something valuable. But because it's brass, she doesn't really have to bear the responsibility of being the goose that laid the golden egg. And because it's a difficult marriage for Katie, I also think that this is a way in which she can express a considerable amount of her rage toward her husband, because she's not giving him what he wants. He wanted something valuable, and she's giving him fool's gold. It's a way of giving him the psychic finger.
So here you are. You're an academic who has studied this. You think it's real. You say she has a psychiatrist who she sees, who I presume thinks it's real, too. Magicians
yes.
cannot duplicate this.
Correct.
So, I mean, if this is true, if this is really happening, I mean, this would overturn what virtually everyone thinks about the way the material world works, the way science works. Why don't we all know about this? Why hasn't this been confirmed by the world of science?
I'd say it has, but the resistance has been just as strong. I mean, I think it's a consequence that a lot of people don't want to deal with. My reaction when I saw my table rise was fear, and I've often wondered why I was so scared, and I've thought about that a lot. And one of the things I think is this, and this is why I think any psychokinesis is potentially very scary to most people who live in industrialized cultures. Think of it this way. If I can move, let's say, a matchstick, if I can move that by a mere millimeter by thinking about it, it's a very small step conceptually from doing that to making somebody drop dead by thinking about it. So the existence of any psychokinesis at all forces us to take seriously a kind of magical worldview that most of us associate, usually condescendingly, only with so-called primitive cultures.
Now, you said before that you were a philosopher in good standing, and then you started studying this paranormal stuff, and things became more difficult for you. Tell me more about that. I mean, what has it been like to be a professional philosopher who deals with this subject?
Well, it hasn't exactly enhanced my career. I've had various kinds of revelations, which ultimately I'm glad to have had. Some of my colleagues, whom I expected to be open-minded and very flexible in their thinking, surprised me with their rigidity and with what I'd say is their intellectual cowardice. I find it particularly surprising when they criticize me, usually very condescendingly, even though it's quite clear that they don't know the evidence even remotely as well as I do. On the other hand, there are some philosophers who I expected actually to be inflexible and not very open-minded, and they surprised me with just the opposite.
But this is understandable, isn't it? I mean, the resistance that you get, I mean, in scientific circles, what you're doing, it seems to me, is that you are questioning the very foundation of what we know science to study. I mean, the material world. You're saying there's something else going on there that science doesn't have a clue about.
Well, that's hardly unprecedented. I mean, how arrogant would it be for a scientist to think, well, we've got all the big mystery solved? I mean, there's still a remarkably naive portion of my being in which I think that scientists and philosophers are really committed to discovering the truth. Somewhere I'd like to think that these people recognize that there's a grander commitment, one to finding out what's really going on, and an excitement about recognizing that we haven't solved all the mysteries and that there are things still to discover about the world.
Stephen Browdy chairs the philosophy department at the University of Maryland. He spoke with Steve Paulson about his new book, The Gold Leaf Lady and Other Parapsychological Investigations.